Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello, and welcome to EAN Cast, weekly neurology. My name is Melinda Mogheri. I am a professor at the University of Copenhagen, a neurologist at the Danish Multiple Sclerosis Center, and the director of the Danish Multiple Sclerosis Registry. This month's topic is about multiple sclerosis, and today's episode, it will be about family planning and management in MS. My guest today is Celia Oreja Guevara. She's a professor and the Vice Chair of Neurology and the Head of MS Center at the University Hospital San Carlos in Madrid, and the Professor of Neurology at the University Complutense Madrid in Spain. Her research interest is centered on family planning, menopause, clinical and neuroimaging correlations in MS. Welcome and thank you for joining us today. So reproductive topics, pregnancy, fertility, it's a very hot topic and we have more and more current evidence. So can we just start to talk about fertility? What is the impact of MS on women's fertility?
Hi, Melinda. It's a pleasure and honor to speak today in this podcast about family planning. I think in multiple sclerosis, I think it's very important in our patients, because our MS patients are young patients. Most of them are females, four females to one man. And the most of them, when we do the diagnosis, is around 30 years old. So that our patients, most of them, they have the desire to become pregnant and to become mothers. So that's infertility is very important. Multiple sclerosis does not impact a woman's fertility, but there is a small controversy. There is some controversy about the anti-Müllerian hormone is reduced or not reduced in women with multiple sclerosis. There are some studies that they are saying that the anti-Müllerian hormone is reduced, but others they say the contrary. The most important thing for the fertility is the age. It's not the multiple sclerosis. It's the same like in the healthy women. The most important parameter is age. Age has a significant impact on the women, and this is the problem. So we know that in all the West societies, the age to become mother is higher and higher, and it's more around 32, 33. Before it was around 25, and that is the big problem. What is the problem? The problem is that normally the patients with MS, they want to be first, they want to have a stable disease so that they wait to have a stable disease, they wait to have no relapses, to cope with the disease. And probably that is the reason why they wait a little more than the healthy women. So when we look at our cohort, the MS women, they become pregnant 2 years later at the Spanish healthy women. So that in general, the problem is not MS, the problem is the age. So that the MS patients, they can have children without any problem. But we recommend not to wait to be very, very, very old. So not to wait until 40, because later it's really very difficult to become pregnant.
Yeah, so pregnancy, we have to talk already at the diagnosis, so we avoid waiting. But just getting back to the question, I remember in the old time, MS women used to be advised against pregnancy. So can you just tell us why this changed?
Yes, so that was, at the beginning, we didn't know too much about the pathogenesis of the disease. And because we could not understand, there was like a prevent rule not to become pregnant. Later, there was a very important paper in the New England Journal of Medicine, so 1998, and they said that the patients with multiple sclerosis, that they were at that time point, the patients, they were not treated, they were without any treatment, that the patients that they were becoming pregnant, they have more relapses in the postpartum, after the delivery. And that was around 30%. So that was really very high. The problem is that this study that was doing in the time that there was no treatment. So that was really a very good study with more than 200 women with MS, but all the patients, they were not treated, so that the situation now is completely different. So we cannot apply the results of this article of the 1998 to the situation of today, where we have more than 16 treatments and our patients are stable and are in treatment. And these patients normally they have no relapses and they are stable without any clinical or radiological activity. So that the things change completely different now that we have treatments. In the article of Cofabre from 1998, that was a 30% of relapses. For example, in our cohort, we have only 7% of relapses in the postpartum phase. For example, the Americans, the cohort of San Francisco and Los Angeles, they have a 9%. And normally these patients that they have relapses is because they were not stable before the pregnancy, or perhaps because they are patients with a very high activity that they have stopped the treatments before the pregnancy. But in general, patients with MS, they can become pregnant. And when we do a very clear and very adequate family planning, later the patients, they have a very, very, very low risk to have a relapse in the after the delivery.
And this is very important to tell the patients. How about if a patient asked about the MS activity and the possible increase of disability?
Yes, that is a very good question, Melinda, because I told before, physicians, they have an influence of this article of Cofabro. And from on the other side, the patients, they are afraid that after the pregnancy, they have more activity, or that perhaps the pregnancy can change the evolution of the disease. What we know until now, there are no scientific evidences that the pregnancy increased the activity of the MS or the disability. So the pregnancy didn't change the evolution of the disease, the pregnancy didn't change the progression. So that really the pregnancy is not impacting in the disease, and the patients they should not be afraid because of the pregnancy. And the most important thing, as I told before, is to have a very good planning of the pregnancy.
And that planning also includes if the woman want to undergo artificial insemination, artificial reproductive technique. So what is the nuance evidence? What should we answer them? Because as you said, women are getting aged, so they may want to do some.
That is another important point, because as I told you before, as you say, patients, the women will... Now they have the children later, so that they are older than before, so that they have more problems with the fertility. Some years ago, they were saying that the in vitro fertilization, they were bad because they have more relapses after then. The problem was that some years ago, they were doing with the agonist, and that was a correlation between to use agonist and to have more relapses after the delivery. But we have seen now that in most of the hospitals, they are using antagonists. So the gynecologists are using antagonists, and with the antagonists, there are no risk of relapses. So that nowadays, there are no risk to have more relapses, to have more activity when the women with MS are using the in vitro fertilization. One point that I want to add is that for patients with MS, it's not very good to have artificial insemination. Why? Because with artificial insemination, there are very few probabilities to become pregnant. And it means that sometimes you need to repeat two or three times. So it means for patients with MS to lose time, always to start the treatment, so that is very complicated. So that always we, for patients with multiple sclerosis, we recommend to go direct to in vitro fertilization. We know that it's a little more expensive in some countries. In some countries, it's not in the health insurance. But it's much better, and it has in vitro fertilization has more success than the artificial insemination. So that's one important thing. Artificial insemination, we don't recommend artificial insemination in our patients, and we think that it's not a problem that a patient can have in vitro fertilization. And very important, always with antagonist, not with agonist.
This is also my. My opinion, but now you already touched the disease-modifying therapies. So what is our recommendation? Because, as you said, women should not wait. But which kind of disease-modifying therapy is approved? What should we recommend? Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so that's some years ago we were thinking when we have the diagnosis of multiple sclerosis in a young woman and she wanted to become pregnant very fast, we thought, okay, she can become pregnant first and later we can treat the patients. We have seen that that is not very good because the patient is not stable and later they can have relapses in the postpartum. So that now when we have when we do the diagnosis of a MS patient, first, the important thing is to treat these patients, and later, when the patient is stable, she can become pregnant. The question is how. It's different when the patient say, I want to become pregnant in 10 years, or when the patient say, I want to become pregnant in 2 years or 3 years. So you need to plan the different treatments. There are treatments that are completely teratogenic, like, for example, the S1P treatments. That S1P treatment, you should stop and wait for a washout period, and later you can start with to try to become pregnant. So that these treatments are not recommended for patients that they want to become pregnant in a short time because you need to stop and later to treat to start with another treatment. But there are other treatments, like, for example, all the injectables, the patients, they can continue until that they are becoming pregnant. Or, for example, we have treatments like the Tecfidera that normally you don't need to stop. You can stop when the patient is becoming pregnant. When the patient is becoming pregnant, you can stop the treatment. And now we know that, for example, with Tysabri, when, because you know that it's a risk to stop the Tysabri before the patients are becoming pregnant, so that you can continue Tysabri or natalizumab until the 32 weeks, so that is not a problem. A different thing is with the anti-CD20. With the anti-CD20, it's a little complicated because in the label is written for Europe 6 months, for Europe 1 year, for USA 6 months, for ofatumumab 4 months, so that is for 6 months, so that is a little complicated with the months. So that is a little different. All are anti-CD20 with different rules, and different is different in USA than in Europe. So that's one thing that is important when in the country is very important to follow the law and to follow the rules you should do. In the case that you can always write that is your recommendation, now they will be every time in the ECTRIMS and every year we'll have more and more data that the anti-CD20, we can give the anti-CD20 until the third month. So that's theoretically, because of the scientific evidence, we can treat the patients and when they are pregnant, we can stop the anti-CD20. That is the scientific evidence. That is completely different from the label. The label, it depends on the country and it depends on the treatment. But in the scientific evidence is that we can continue with the ocrelizumab until the patient is pregnant, and when the patient is pregnant, we stop. We know that the first three months, the antibody, the anti-CD20, they cannot cross the placenta, so that there is not a problem. But it's very important that you need to follow the label or the rules in your country not to have problems with the law. But the scientific is different. The scientific is, in the first 3 months of the pregnancy, there are no problems with the anti-CD20.
You mentioned the Tysabri, and also that it can be continued in extended dose up to week 32. And then you recommend taking cord blood for hematological control of the newborn, or what's your praxis?
Yes, so as you say, we continue Tysabri in the extended dose, so every 6 weeks. No, later what we do normally is when the newborn, we take blood of the newborn the first day and later 1 week later, and that is enough. Normally, until now, we have no problems. Because when in the case that they have an anemia, that is always very mild. But we take always for the newborn the first day and 1 week later, and there is normally not a problem. But it's better to take the blood for the case.
Another thing that women ask when family planning, how about breastfeeding? What is the current evidence to recommend today?
So that is difficult. So that's some of the studies, they have some bias. So that's that it seems that the exclusive breastfeeding can't protect for the relapses. But there are some studies that they support this idea, but there are some studies like the Italian studies that they say to breastfeeding, yes or not, has no influence in the relapse rate. So we normally, we do in another way, so that we, when the patient want to breastfeed because of something cultural or because she wants to do. Okay, and when the patient was treated with a moderate efficacy, we leave the patients or we treat the patient at the same time with interferons or Copaxone. In the case that the patient is coming from the high efficacy treatments, normally we don't recommend to breastfeed. And when in the case that they want to breastfeed and they are becoming from the high efficacy treatments, in this case, we decide, for example, to have to breastfeed and at the same time to have ofatumumab because ofatumumab is allowed for the breastfeeding so that in this case, the patient has no relapses. So for patients with moderate efficacy, it's not a problem to have breastfeeding. For patients that they are coming from natalizumab or anti-CD20 or anti-CD20, normally we prefer that they don't breastfeed. But in the case that they want to breastfeed, we prefer that they have treatment at the same time. And for this reason, it's only in the label, only ofatumumab is allowed so that they can do. But it depends on the cultures. In Spain, our culture, I will say, is more rational. And we look that the patient with MS should be healthy to take care of the baby. Yeah. So that I think is a cultural thing. We prefer that the patient has no relapses and she can take care of the babies. But there are some cultures where breastfeeding is very, very, very important and the patient, the woman should breastfeed, is like an obligation. So that in these countries, I will say it's better to treat at the same time the patients with the breastfeeding. So, but I think breastfeeding is a cultural thing, but I think for us, at least in Spain, the most important thing is that the patient is healthy so that the MS patient has no relapses during the postpartum time. So that I think it's very important that in the case that the patient is really with a high activity to treat the patient and breastfeeding will be in a second part. Yeah, I think it's important, but it's a cultural thing. There are some countries that in the Nordic countries, or for example, in Germany, when I was working there, that is a cultural thing and the patients are more or less obliged to breastfeeding. But I will say in these cases, I will try to treat at the same time.
Yeah, and this is what we do as well. Luckily, ofatumumab can be treated. So when a woman wishes to breastfeed, there are some possibility, hopefully, different places. So there are very good news from women that the frequency of relapses are lower and no disability. But what should we do if a woman anyway have a relapse during pregnancy or breastfeeding?
So I think when they have a relapse and there's a mild relapse during the pregnancy, okay, when it is very mild, we don't treat. When they have a moderate or strong relapse, we treat with corticosteroids. Corticosteroids is theoretically only a problem in the first trimester of the pregnancy. But when it is necessary, it's better to treat the patient than to have later the patient with a disability. The only thing that you need to know that in the first trimester of the pregnancy, later perhaps they can have some problems with the lip that they can solve with an operation with surgery. When you do need, we have some patients in our center that they have received corticosteroid in the first trimester and that was not a problem. Later, there is not a problem. You can give corticosteroid when you need. And I think it's better to give corticosteroid when you have a severe relapse and not to have the patient with disability and the pregnancy. And the same for the breastfeeding. So when the breastfeeding, it's better to give corticosteroids and to stop the breastfeeding. I think that is one important thing is that we need to have a healthy patient, healthy MS patient, and a healthy newborn. So that I think our objective is always to try to avoid relapses. And when we need to do corticosteroids, we give. And when we need to stop the breastfeeding, we do.
Yeah, and I agree. I think there are plenty of possibilities today to have a healthy mother and a healthy child. So I will just start to wrap up that it's important family planning already at the diagnosis to help the mother getting pregnant in younger age to don't get any fertility problem and to get a natural conception. It's very good to guide them for disease modifying therapy according to disease activity and also already get the talk about breastfeeding and the treatment possibilities. So do you have any, so I try to wrap it up. Anything to add, Celia? You have a final recommendation for the neurologist?
No, I think that is, it's very important to plan the pregnancy, that the patients are stable before to become pregnant. And I think for big centers, I will recommend to have a specialized consultation for family planning. We have one every Monday. I think it's very important because you can follow these patients. And when you do in a very, so with a protocol, at the end, you have less patients with relapses, less patients with radiological activity, and you have more healthy MS patients and healthy newborn.
Yeah, and I totally agree. So information to neurologists and patients is important. So yes, thank you for coming and covering this complex topic. Thank you, and thank you for everybody for listening.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Thank you.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.